ready to hear the fourth case now, Lid Electric against the Electrical Workers Union. Mr. Stoltenbach.
Morning, Your Honor. I represent the Electrical Joint Arbitration Board in this case, and as you know, this is an appeal by the IBEW Local 134 and the Joint Arbitration Board from a district court decision granting summary judgment and vacating an arbitration award issued by the joint board.
Mr. Stoltenbach, let me just start you out, because is this more properly a dispute between Lid and MECA rather than between Lid and the union and the EGAB? In other words, is the ECA a necessary party to this action?
Your Honor, I don't know if it's a necessary party. I think it's an issue that hasn't been addressed by any party in this case,
I know.
Other than Local 134 at one point filed a motion to dismiss itself. I think in the typical situation, the parties sued in a vacation of arbitration case, it will be one party to the contract versus another party. And in this case, because of the nature of the beast, if you will, we have not that situation. We have one employer suing the union and the joint board. And I think in this particular situation, the joint board is an appropriate party because of the nature of it, that it's a creation of the agreement and the fact that the board sits to enforce the agreement. I think Local 134 is certainly an appropriate party. And while ECA may have been an appropriate party, the plaintiff chose not to go that route, and we haven't objected, and I can't say that.
See, I mean, as a case challenging an arbitration award, it seems a bit unusual to me in the sense that no one is disputing what the collective bargaining agreement says on the subject of drug testing. So the issue, it seems to me, is whether or not ECA had the power to bind Lid on matters affecting non-union employees. Was the scope of ECA's authority something that the EJAB addressed in resolving the grievance? I mean, did it even have the power to address that point?
There's nothing in the record about the proceedings before the Joint Arbitration Board, but the one thing that is in the record is the decision, and the decision doesn't address that issue. Frankly, I'm not sure if Lid Electric raised the issue at the time of the grievance or not, but it certainly wasn't a focal point, to say the least, of the decision. The decision was simply, the contract says what it says and you are not following it, therefore you're in violation. And I think Lid, throughout this case, hasn't disputed that it's not doing what the contract says, as you recognize it's more of an underlying issue of whether the contract is enforceable and valid in and of itself.
Counsel, I have another question that may take you in a different direction, which is, what is at stake here? The collective bargaining agreement that is the subject of this case has expired. So why are we here?
A new agreement has been entered into, which doesn't change the terms of the previous agreement.
Yes, but the new agreement presumably is entered in, and is Lid still a member of the Contractors Association? But Lid could have withdrawn from the Contractors Association.
Correct.
The situation now is different, because Lid knew when it decided to remain in for this round that the contract had asserted a power to cover non-bargaining unit members. Right, so Lid's argument, which is that it got stunned and surprised when this was extended outside the bargaining unit, is no longer tenable. It's not on the table. Is there any retrospective relief that's at issue here?
Well, I think that it still is on the table, Your Honor, because Lid's position has been that ETA never had the authority to enter into this agreement in the first place, so that
Lid knows that ECA believes it has this authority. Lid has decided that it will stay in the ECA and continue to grant a power to ECA. So the world is different as of 1983. question stands, is there any retrospective relief at issue here?
I think so. If the arbitration award is not, if the district court's decision is not reversed and the arbitration award is still vacated, that award will still stand as the
award. Is the relief provided?
The award as it stands takes away LID's right to receive referrals from the union hall. So
not forever, for the period of the collective bargaining agreement. That's over. Right? Going forward, does this award have any effect whatsoever? None that I can see.
I think technically maybe the award doesn't have any, or you could make the argument that they need to file a new grievance perhaps under the new contract and take it through all the steps again. But I think that we'll end up in the same place, and I think that...
Well, I'm not sure how we end up in the same place, given that LID Electric knew when it decided to cast its lot with the EJA in 2003, with the ECA in 2003, that this is what it was going to get.
That would certainly be our argument in the second case, if there were one. But I think LID's argument would be, and this is what we hope to avoid, that, well, the letter of assent that we signed is the same as the letter of assent was before, and you still didn't have the power to do this, regardless of what you think you had the power to do. And, you know, we're concerned about basically repeating the process over again to have the same results occur. I think in the Cox Corporation case that we cited from the Sixth Circuit, the same issue was raised, and the Sixth Circuit ruled that the issue was not moot, even though the contract had expired. So I don't think there's a mootness issue in this instance. The main issue here still is LID's assertion that ECA didn't have any authority to bind it to the agreement that it reached. And the crux of that argument comes down to its claim that the Joint Arbitration Board, or the association and the union, were bargaining in effect for the non-union employees of LID Electric, but that's simply not what occurred in this case. And what occurred in this case was the association bargained with the union.
Let me come back to the citation you just gave. You said
sure.
Cox in the Sixth Circuit? Your citation in your brief is that Cox is an NLRB case.
I believe we, in the opening brief, cited the Sixth Circuit case as well. On pages 26 and 27.
Yeah. All right, well.
Not for the mootness point.
No, sorry. It's just not there.
I have on page 26 particularly instructive on this point of Pact 4 in 4, 593 F 2nd 261, Sixth Circuit, 19.
Okay. Anyway, just continue. We'll find it. We'll find it.
The union's, LID Electric's central argument is that somehow the parties bargained for its non-union union employees, but that's not the case here, because LID Electric assigned its authority to the association, which then bargained with Local 134 for the employees in the bargaining unit. What they agreed to included one particular term which affected people outside the unit, but that's not the same as bargaining on behalf of those employees. And no one here, frankly, has argued that the union now represents these non-union employees. There's simply one contract provision that affects them, and the case law is longstanding that it's perfectly lawful and acceptable to agree to a provision that affects people outside the bargaining unit. I see I'm nearly running out of time, so maybe I'll let Mr. Summers have his say on LID's behalf and reserve some time to respond.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Summers.
May it please the court, counsel. I need to establish a few things right off the bat. Lid's position is that it has in no manner, shape, or form violated the collective bargaining agreement. I don't have time here in this brief period, but if you look at the language in the collective bargaining agreement, it talks about enabling the employer to establish a drug testing procedure. That's all that's in the contract.
But your real dispute isn't with the union or the joint arbitration board, is it?
Yes.
Isn't it with the association which agreed to the provision?
Well, I suppose that in reality our dispute is with everyone, because the EJAB, the Joint Arbitration Board, is comprised of members of the association and the union. And the way that this contract is set up, the EJAB is given authority for them to get together and, you know, according to them, make whatever rules they want in terms of plenary authority. The two important things, as they said, I'm, you know, sort of bouncing here because things have been raised. I think it's important for the court to carefully analyze what the contract provision itself is about instituting a drug testing program. I also think that it's very important to look at the letter of assent and the recognition of the scope of the bargaining unit.
I guess my problem was that Judge Goodman said that Lid's non-union employees never agreed to give the union the authority to negotiate the surrender of their privacy rights. But it's not the union that negotiated away their rights, but rather the ECA, which did this on behalf of the employers, unless I'm just way.
Well, you know, I frankly can't account for all the terminology that Judge Guzman used. What I can tell the court is that the argument that by signing on to an association, you grant the association authority to do anything in the world to affect the terms and conditions of employment of your non-union employees outside the collective bargaining agreement.
Could they reach an agreement with respect to the pension or health benefits of retirees?
With respect to the pension and health insurance benefits of retirees who were former unit members, mm-hmm. there's no conflict with the National Labor Relations Act because they are not employees. They're no longer working.
No. Wait. The council. They are not members of the bargaining unit. That's
the absolutely correct.
Glass. And as soon as you say that you have granted to the ECA the authority to negotiate on your behalf any terms and conditions of non-bargaining unit members, why isn't the jig up?
Because the other employees have their own National Labor Relations Act rights to organize as they wish to do any number of things.
Yes. Are you arguing? I didn't understand your brief to be arguing that there was, that LID had an inconsistent collective bargaining agreement with any other of its employees.
I think that would create
a tough problem.
I think that was mentioned in partly by way of footnote.
Are you arguing that you have an inconsistent
yes.
collective bargaining agreement with other employees?
Yes. That's footnote 4 on page 14 of our brief.
Could LID have unilaterally required its non-union employees to submit to drug testing?
There is no question that LID could unilaterally have required its non-union employees to submit to drug testing. There is no question that LID, LID or the ECA could have agreed to not drug test its bargaining unit employees unless there was parity, and it also drug tested the non-bargaining unit employees. But there's nothing in the law, there's nothing that would permit anyone to require the non-union employees to go through the union's drug testing program would apply to the bargaining unit employees, and as to whom there can be disciplinary measures, remedial measures. It's in all bold capitals, the consequences of your failure to participate and to follow the union's drug program's rules.
Okay, let's come back to my question. Okay. The footnote in your brief does not make the claim that you have now made orally. The question I asked was, is LID asserting that it has an inconsistent contractual obligation? The footnote just says, LID is signatory to a collective bargaining agreement with the operating engineers.
Yes.
Is that inconsistent with the agreement that has been made through the ECA?
In my opinion, it is fundamentally inconsistent, because what the alliance policy is purporting to do is to, and it says expressly, I wish I could find the exact provision, it says expressly that any decision or application must recognize and follow the EJAB's authority.
Look, I'll try once more.
Yes.
Is there a provision in this other collective bargaining agreement with respect to drug testing that is inconsistent with the agreement that was reached between the ECA and the Electrical Workers Union?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know if it exists or not, but the bargaining obligation...
Now I have the other question with which we began, which is, what is at stake in this case now? The collective bargaining agreement that gave rise to this award has expired. So what is at stake today?
What is at stake today is the fact...
In this case.
Is the fact that, as counsel stated, we've been advised that if the district court's decision is reversed, our referral rights may be suspended.
But not under the 1999-98 collective bargaining agreement. It would presumably be under the May 2003 collective bargaining agreement.
Yes, I don't. As with counsel.
And there was no doubt that LID knew when it agreed to allow the ECA to represent it in 2003 that this agreement had such a clause.
Once again, Your Honor, I respectfully disagree. This agreement does not have such a clause. The EJAB interpretation of what is going to be enforced and what is going to be extended.
All right. Look, quibbling with language just isn't going to help. The ECA and the union jointly believe that it is part of their collective bargaining arrangement that there be certain rules with respect to drug testing.
Agreed.
LID has authorized the ECA to be its agent for purposes of collective bargaining. LID
right.
is therefore bound by that view of its agent.
I disagree.
What concrete dispute lasted past 2003, given that LID knew that that was the position of the person to whom it was delegating bargaining authority?
Well, I would only say that both sides in this dispute reserve all their rights and everything going forward, that we agreed that nothing that happened subsequently would obviate the rights
Sorry,
or position.
Sorry, you can't agree to submit cases to federal courts seeking advisory opinions. Lawyers want that all the time, but we're not in that business, even if the parties agree.
Well,
in fact, especially if the parties agree.
I think that, Your Honor, you're missing the point. The point is that we didn't agree to anything about federal jurisdiction. What was agreed was that by continuing to participate in the wages and benefits provisions and the work rules, and the referral system of the union, that the dispute over whether the same letter of authority that was in place for the prior agreement and necessarily carried over to the successor agreement was broad enough to grant the ECA the right to engage in this kind of bargaining, which put an obligation on LID's non-union employees. I guess I would ask.
Maybe the problem is we're not even speaking the same terms of what the stakes of the case are. This agreement doesn't place any obligation on LID's non-union employees. The only person who has signed the letter is LID. This agreement places an obligation on LID, not on any of its employees. LID has to behave in a way that comports with the collective bargaining agreement.
LID has to force its non-union employees to submit to the union's drug testing program. Mm. I think that's as clearly stated as the obligation can be. And there is no case that I am aware of anywhere in the law that places a negative duty on non-unit employees of that nature. Could ICA agree on
being... I think we have your position, Mr. Summers.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Stolzenbach, anything further?
A couple of brief things.
Before you do any brief things, I do have a question about LID's claim that it has another collective bargaining agreement with another union. Now, drug testing would be a mandatory subject of collective bargaining with respect to the unit members under that other collective bargaining agreement.
Correct.
How can the ECA and the Electrical Workers Union change that collective bargaining agreement without LID bargaining with its other union?
I think there's two responses to that. The first is neither the union nor the association has ever attempted to enforce this agreement as saying that employers have to apply the alliance policy to other bargaining units. That's an interpretation of the contract.
The interpretation that was given in this very case is that the employer must apply this to all of its employees. Well, all employees includes people in other bargaining units with other unions.
But I think, although that may be what Judge Guzman's decision says.
That's what your brief says.
And that's also a fair characterization of our brief. But I think that in reality, and as we noted in a footnote of our appellate brief, no one in this case is seeking to do that. The second point
is... So what we're to understand is that the agreement is so obviously illegal that you wouldn't seek to enforce it.
No, I don't think it's that obviously illegal. I think the agreement...
It is obviously illegal as applied to people covered by a different... in a different bargaining unit, and therefore with a different bargaining obligation.
If LID had agreed to apply the alliance policy to its operating engineers, I don't think that would necessarily be an illegal agreement. It may be a silly agreement in the fact that it would have a requirement to bargain with the operating engineers before it could enforce.
There's an outstanding collective bargaining agreement with the operating engineers. Behaving in any way other than as provided by that agreement is affirmatively illegal.
LID could not apply the alliance policy to the operating engineers without first bargaining with the operating engineers. There's no doubt about that. If the contract with Local 134 actually required LID to apply the alliance policy to the operating engineers, it could not, basically would have to breach the contract unless and until it could bargain with the operating engineers first to put it in place, either to agreement with the operating engineers or to impasse and then implement.
Can't bargain to impasse in mid-agreement. Unless there's a waiver by the operating engineers of the provision that the contract lasts till 2007, the employer can't make a mid-term proposal, bargain to impasse, and then implement it.
If it's not
it
covered.
It is stuck with the collective bargaining agreement until 2007.
If the issue
this is
not
black letter law, counsel.
If the issue is not covered in the current agreement, it can bargain to impasse over that issue if there's no drug testing policy in the current operating engineers agreement. I don't know what's in the operating engineers agreement because it's not in the record. We have a cover sheet to the agreement that doesn't, frankly, mention LID at all. So I don't know what the agreement says or how LID's involvement in it exists at this date. I see I'm out of time. If I could address them.
No, your time has expired unless there are further questions.
Okay.
Thank you very much. case is taken under advisement.